Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vonta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vonta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vonta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get a special offer of $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU Startups. That's vonta.com/EU Startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Benedikt von Schiller. Benedikt is one of the founding partners of V-Squared Ventures. V-Squared just closed a second fund of 214 million euros to cash in on Europe's deep tech boom. Bene, welcome on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Awesome. So Benedikt, with over 240 million euros raised for V-Squared 2, deep tech is, a tough gig. How do you decide which moonshot ideas bet on?
I think that recent raise is a great message to Europe and Europe's founders.
Congrats, by the way, on the raise.
Thank you. Yeah, no, we're excited because I mean we've been promoting or doubling down on this segment for years now, and have always been very strong believers. And I think this is testimony to that. And the entire ecosystem is growing, so that's phenomenal news. I think to Europe and the deep tech ecosystem. With regards to your question, how do you decide which moonshots to back on? I think there's a little bit of a misconception in the sense that we say deep tech has always to be something absolutely crazy and unbelievable, and then 20 years down the road we can see whether this is actually materializing. I think fundamentally we're doing the same as many other VCs. We're trying to be really diligent on the market potential. We're super diligent on the tech. So we don't do science risk or any fancy sort of science projections, but we focus on engineering challenges and how can you actually scale this. Most importantly, actually, is the team really the right team to get this company, or it's has the team what it takes to grow and to make it successful? And I think with deep tech, you have some particular challenges is in the sense that sometimes you need to complement the team in a way that you have more commercial acumen. And sometimes, or in many cases, we actually don't yet have revenues. It's not your traditional, step by step and your SaaS metrics that you normally see, but you work towards inflection points. And when you hit those inflection points and everything is in place, then this can get really big. And that's what excites us.
Amazing. Benedikt, so let's dig a bit deeper into this. I know that, V-Squared Ventures is all about, as you already mentioned, engineering the impossible. What's the craziest, kind of mad scientist project you funded, and what made you say yes to it?
Well, first of all, we don't try to invest in mad scientist stuff, but in mad scientists turning into reality and becoming hyper successful. So, I guess many of our deals initially sound a little bit crazy, and you need to be a strong believer. But it's always a fine balance, you know, about staying on the forefront and then at the same time, being close to commercialization and, turning all these crazy things into reality. So back then, when we invested in ESA Aerospace in 2018, everybody was like, "Okay, sounds really crazy. Why would you do that?" We've had looked at the space for a couple of years already and kind of or saw that there's gaining momentum and this that there was really early traction, and this ESA Aerospace was the third or fourth team we looked at, and then it all came together and felt right. But I mean, most recently, what blows my mind, for instance, is InBrain Neuroelectronics, startup where you have a it's a little bit like Neuralink, Elon Musk Neuralink, but just a lot better in multiple dimensions, and eventually through graphene, this novel material, you can try to cure or at least address some of the worst. Worst symptoms of Alzheimer or Parkinson, and this is obviously mind blowing. Yeah,
amazing.
So there's not one week where I'm not amazed by something.
Yeah, this is crazy. This is so good, and this is also so good to hear that things like that are being developed and peeled. But as you mentioned, you guys backed ESA Aerospace before the space boom. You already kind of said what gave you the guts to go all in on the rocket builders. Maybe you can tell me a bit more of like, how do you support such company once you invest in them?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all in on the rocket boom was really also part of, because we did our homework before, you know, finding startups is always a push and pull, and you need to, I mean, if just somebody knocks on your door and says, "I build a rocket," you're like, okay, great, but thanks, but no thanks. But if you've done already some of your homework and you've identified new space as a market actually, and something that is emerging, then there's more fertile grounds. So as I said, we had looked at a couple of other startups in this segment before. In 2017-18, there were, I think, at least 30 launch concepts out there that also gave us an indication that something is cooking. And when these guys knocked at our door or we started the conversation, they're all from the Technical University in Munich. A lot of things just felt right and came into place, and we had the great luck to actually partner up with Bülent Altan, one of the very first engineers of SpaceX, who's sort of got back to Munich and also had a look at all the launch concepts out there and said, okay, these guys are the ones that have what it takes. And in all of our conversations, I still remember very vividly being in a restaurant with Daniel of Iser, and we kind of said, okay, we need to diligence this further, or this sounds too good to be true. And we fired every single question we could possibly think of at him, and he had a good answer for all of them. And we were like, okay, if nice. Someone is pulling this off, then it's Daniel and his team. So that was great. But supporting them early on was tough, because we were naive, at least we were early believers. And there weren't too many early believers out there. So the Series A actually then that sort of followed a year and a half later was about 10 million. Nowadays, I mean, everybody laughs at a 10 million raise, but back then in 2019, this was actually a big deal, especially for a rocket launch concept. And this was the sort of getting out of the starting position and grow initially was probably the hardest bit. I guess if you talk to them now, then the hardest bit is always the next thing. Stay close, support as much as you can wherever, especially in the early days, then obviously as the momentum grows, the ecosystem grows, you have a more broader support, and you can rely on multiple sources. Government has been also playing a major role, obviously, promoting this now. Really helping build this ecosystem has been one of our core tasks in the early days.
Nice. Amazing. I'm generally super interested in this stuff. I had Helen Hubi on the show time ago. Like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
And what they're doing with the exploration company as well. So we talked about like some of the you know, kind of success stories that you guys are having. But like, so what about the other side? What's your most expensive deep tech fuck up, and why? What did you learn from it?
Here's the thing: why we also believe that actually deep tech is such a great asset class or pocket within venture capital. You always have an intrinsic value. You have IP. You have unique knowledge within the teams. Knock on wood, so far we did not have a complete write-off, which is, I think, exceptional. You could also say, well, you're not taking enough risks. That's sometimes what we get from LPs. I do believe that we do take enough risks, but we invest in companies where there is something to it. So on aggregate, all exits that we've done that have not performed or have not worked the way we planned, I think on aggregate we got a little bit more or less our money back. But then there are companies obviously where you lose, and you lose then 1%, 2%, 3% of your overall fund. But there's so much obviously upside in the other companies that compensate or should compensate for that. I mean, that's the intrinsic that's the core part of a venture fund. So
yeah, that's just how it works. Yeah, exactly. So actually, speaking about money and how VCs work, how do you juggle making a positive impact with, you know, keeping the investors happy? How do you make sure your mind-blowing ideas also pay the bills?
For us, this is not necessarily a contradiction. I think even the contrary. I think it's reinforcing each other. So if you have great technology, it should have, or at least the way we think about it, it should have address large new markets. It should have a tremendous positive impact on some elements. Or aspects of certain markets, or redefine new markets, and all technology that we invest in is contributing in a positive way. Otherwise, I mean, it will be hard to make money. So, yeah. I mean, for instance, and the more obvious stuff is energy transition. We sort of invest in high performance battery tech. We invest in e-aviation. We invest in hydrogen, next gen hydrogen technology. So all this is very obvious. But then also in more energy efficient sort of edge computing, semicon chips, things like that. If the whole AI boom won't work without this novel semicon technologies, or at least will be very costly and highly energy inefficient. So this is a little bit lesser obvious probably. But the company I mentioned earlier, InBrain Neuroelectronics, if that works out and it really looks like that, then they have their first sort of blue chip high end partners in this, then this has a tremendous positive impact. So wherever we look, or I can't really think of a startup where you'd say, okay, well, this is actually not that great if it works out. Yeah. I think we could label ourselves also as impact fund, but I think we're very happy in the deep tech niche and deep tech branding segment.
100%. So you know, you mentioned in the beginning that you know, it's kind of all about a team, right? And I think like top talent, best talent, especially in like deep tech, is probably even like more important than in any other sector or equally important. How do you actually snag and keep the best talent in niche fields like quantum computing and AI?
Yeah, I think we can support as a fund, and obviously as we grow and our network grows, and the more investments we have, the more relationships to important ecosystems we have towards technical universities across Europe, the better our network becomes. Mm-hmm. And we've hired a dedicated head of platform. I mean, we might also look into hiring a dedicated HR persons, et cetera, to really do this in a systematic way. But it all starts with the initial team that you invest on. You know, yeah. Success breeds success, and renommé comes through the initial team and their academic credentials, yeah. Their initial network.
So you have eight players attract eight players.
Yes. And for instance, IQM Quantum Computing, when we invested there in 2019, one of our core, let's say, beliefs or reasons why we did it was, okay, this is the most complete, best quantum team. It was out of Aalto University in close to Helsinki. One of the most complete teams that are actually available in Europe, you know, and that that you can invest in. And if you don't invest in them, then it will get quite tough because mm-hmm. it's a scarce resource. And I think we're this was one of our better calls. and so far, I think if you're a cutting edge, top notch quantum physicist or scientist, you definitely know IQM, and chances are that you want to work there are pretty high.
100%. Bennett, how do you like speaking about like governments getting involved and all the red tape? How do you help your startups navigate the fun world of regulations?
that's a tough question. we're still navigating through the maze. I mean, this is a never ending story. Where I mean, you need to sort of work on constantly. We do engage also on government level and on regulatory discussions. And try to be very, very open, pragmatic. Also, listen to what you know, what politics has to say and where they want to go, and keep this dialogue. But and we're to be fair and frank. I think a couple of our portfolio companies are really benefiting from governmental support, mm-hmm. and would not be possible without this German or European support. One of our portfolio companies, Black Semiconductor, just announced a very large 255 million round, out of which around about 225 was really public grant. So this IPCE grant, important project of common European interest. So these are it's moving in the right direction. But I mean, having said that, you're absolutely right. Europe is not yet a common market. It's extremely hard to sort of do cross-border stuff. You know, just investing as a German fund into a Portuguese startup is completely different than investing in a Polish startup. Shouldn't be that difficult, you know, and that is slowing us down. And if I can hope for one thing, is that we actually exit markets are also sort of becoming a more European exit markets, you know, have a joint European stock market, lose a little bit this thinking about, well, this is a great German success example of success. No, this is a European example of success. Exactly. And only when this mindset changes further, we will really be competitive to the US, I think.
Yeah, and able to scale. Yeah, 100%. You know, Ben, founders' journeys, like they tend to get messy and tough sometimes, or maybe most of the time, and also lonely. You know, how do you stay supportive and like productive with entrepreneurs when things get really tough?
I think it starts at the very beginning. I mean, you need to build trust from day one on, and it probably starts even before you invest, you know, that you've showed that you did the proper due diligence, that you're not just, you know, showing up, spending some money and leave again, but that you really believe in their journey, in their ideas, in their capabilities. So building trust from day one is key. But yeah, when the going gets really tough, then I think it's a lot about explaining also the investor perspective, and to also not get offended either side, but to show them that you're essentially on the same side of the table. Sometimes you then get this notion that they think, okay, you want to just, you know, rip them off and leave. But I think the essence of it all is that we can only be successful together. There's no shortcut in being successful in ripping off founders or companies. I mean, truth be told, sometimes it works better, sometimes it works less well. But knock on wood. I mean, you always need to be keep the conversation open. And I think, luckily, so far we did not have an incident where we sort of parted in a massive fight. But we got our ultimately pulled the same strings.
You guys seem like you got all figured out, like you're like very happy, lucky, managing there, like no major fuck ups yet, no major incidents. Like, that's awesome. Let's keep it this way.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, the true privilege of this all is that you work with optimists 100%.
You gotta be
100% of the time. I do have sleepless nights. I mean, this is, and you are worried about things. Witnessing this great potential of Europe is a phenomenal thing and privilege to have. Yeah,
amazing. And optimists live longer, I've heard.
I hope so. That's good. Great to hear. Yeah.
And speaking of. Things that keep you up at night, but in a good way this time. I know you already mentioned the startup that you recently invested in, the InBrain Electronics, right?
Neuroelectronics, yeah.
Neuroelectronics, yeah. So what's the next big thing in tech that'll blow our minds? Any wild predictions for the future that actually keep you up at night in a good way?
What sometimes keeps me up is actually the speed of things, of transformation. And I think in some fields we're underestimating the speed of things happening. New space, actually, and you mentioned Hélène Huby. She's working really on the privatization of space and working on sort of having a very sort of frequent comment space transport and building a space infrastructure. I mean, if you had that 5 years ago, you'd be like, yeah, get the hell out of here. So this with the Falcon Heavy now being also in operation, I think this will only accelerate. I'm quite hopeful with the energy transition. I think we've seen such great improvements lately. I don't believe in that nuclear fusion will be anything happening within this decade. That's mm-hmm. why we also haven't invested in that yet. But I do believe that in the whole field of energy transition and especially battery technology, mm-hmm. we have so much progress that's not yet really appreciated by the markets that yeah. things like e-aviation will become absolutely natural within the next five, six years. Semiconductor and quantum computing is a lot of developments mm-hmm. there as we speak. Tech bio, I mean you mentioned inbrain neuroelectronics. Mm-hmm. So literally I kind of it's hard to pick out one and yeah. Yes, I do appreciate the AI hype, but that's one aspect of it. Mm-hmm. There are also a lot of other areas and this all goes simultaneously and they accelerate each other. So
yeah.
the future is bright. I think the
awesome
technology will really help us.
That's amazing. Bennett, so how's V-Squared staying ahead of the game? How do you and do you have any new projects or initiatives that you're looking forward to? I know that you recently raised the fund, so probably you're looking forward to deploying it.
Yeah, well, we have already. I mean, raising a fund is nothing that happens overnight. Obviously, this is a longer process. So we have already started investing the fund. And yes, this will be our core focus for the next foreseeable future. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I mean, staying on the forefront it's a lot about mindset. You know. Mm-hmm. Stay curious, stay humble, stay interested in new things, and try to do things a little bit differently here and there. If you never be successful in just copying what everybody else, or you can be successful, but you know, to really have a unique positioning, you need to be unique in a couple of things. And also appreciate, I mean, some of the founders we invest in there, or I always advocate, stay humble. I think that's really mm-hmm. key. There's so many fantastic things out there and yeah. nobody has waited for you ultimately. And it can be the most fascinating tech you've ever came up with mm-hmm. Or that humankind can think of. If you're not able to actually commercialize it, it's worth nothing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely key. And yeah, some founders learn it the hard way. So this is also our job to really be disciplined. And unless you have 100% product market fit, you mustn't open the money floodgates, so to speak. But stay humble.
Awesome. Bennett, this is going to be the last one. I've been really enjoying this conversation. I could probably talk to you for hours, but we don't have that much time, unfortunately. So what are you all about when you're not backing the founders that are building the future? I know that you're based out of beautiful Munich. What keeps you going and kind of sane outside of work?
Well, sane or insane, I obviously have a family with three very young, adorable and very active girls. So yeah. that keeps me definitely active. No, but it's again, and this sounds not too cheesy, but this mm-hmm. this privilege to merge work and private life and is great. You know, stay interested in many things, and often you travel also privately, and you come across something work related and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I would hope that we actually would invest more in sports tech, because that's what I yet have to find the right investments, or you know, where I can combine my love for sports with real deep tech. But yeah. We missed on a great company called Kinexon here out of Munich. They now have all the technology for in the soccer European soccer championships in the ball and sort of the goal technology. Okay. Missed that one, but other than that stay curious.
Yeah. And how old are your daughters? Like, are they old enough to already get interested in the stuff that you're doing?
They're interested in football with 4, 5, and 7. But I've been to the elementary school of my eldest, first class, and talked a little bit about what we do. And they just fired away with questions. It was really, really cool to see. But I think it's still fairly higher level. So if I talk about rockets, it's fine. That's about it.
Nice. Amazing. Benev, thanks so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Likewise.
Let's keep backing these future leaders and people build in the future. I wish you all the best. Thanks so much and talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good one.